unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Hot Iron, was written by Joseph Mindell and is a third in a series entitled Judgment and Justice.
When he was young, he wrote pretty stories for children, but he grew older.
I am no maker of fairy tales. And I feel that the only way to attack evil is with a hot iron.
He was a hot iron, pouring out his passion to flood a world grown indifferent to evil.
First, I place a nail. Then, with a stroke of the hammer, I drive this nail an inch into the brain of the public. And then, with another stroke, I make it go another inch.
Loved and hated, honored and reviled, he expended the years of his life in setting the nails of truth.
It is only a man who makes an impression, not a book. We need men, not books.
His name was Émile Zola, writer of books and a man. You could see him 100 years ago almost anywhere in Paris, in the streets of the poor, the salons of the wealthy, high on the rooftops and the glow of the city's lights, down in the odorous dark of the Paris sewers. You might have seen Émile Zola one day in Les Halles, the great sprawling markets, where the food is brought that nourishes a city.
Madame! Pardon, pardon me, madame.
Who, me?
Yes, I want to ask you...
Madame, he said. Did you hear him?
Madame Suzette, queen of the fish!
Shut up! Shut up, all of you! Now what do you want?
Yes, tell me, do you lift these barrels of fish by yourself?
Maybe you'd like to help me.
Oh, but of course, I'll just take off my coat.
Oh, never mind, never mind. You'll dirty your fine clothes.
What kind of fish are they and where do they come from?
How should I know, as long as the bellies are hard and they don't stink?
But if they do, what do you do with the spoiled fish?
Hey, what are you doing writing all this down? You're an inspector.
No, believe me, madame. Suzette. I only ask because I want to know.
I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm a hard-working woman trying to earn an honest living, such as it is.
Yes, and how much do you earn a day, Suzette?
Why are you asking all these questions?
How many hours do you work? Where do you live? Who takes care of your children all day? And are you very tired when you get home, my poor Suzette?
Be on your way. We don't like Snoop.
Oh, I am no Snoop. I only want the world to know how you labor, all of you. How you struggle and suffer. I want to tell of your misery. Yes, and of your strength. As you work to feed Paris, while Paris reclines in its boudoir, sipping a demi-tasse.
You are angry, monsieur.
Yes. Injustice and indifference always make me angry.
Then you must be angry very often. If for me, I do not expect anyone to be concerned about me and my struggles.
They must be concerned. I will make them concerned.
Yes, you are perhaps of the Chamber of Deputies.
No, Madame Suzette. I am a novelist.
Give it up, my dear Zola. You are no novelist.
No?
It is my considered opinion, as a literary critic of, if I may say so, of no little standing...
And of no few words.
I beg your pardon.
Granted, since you cannot help yourself.
I don't know why I bother to talk.
Well, perhaps because my novels disturb your equilibrium.
Your novels, as you call them, are nothing but collections of filth and obscenity.
Everything I have written is true.
Sordid accounts of sordid misery.
My method is to show life as it really is. And to do this, I must first observe what life is.
Ah, yes, yes. We know Zola the Observer with his pencil and notebook in the literary salons, at the soirees of society.
And also in the sewers of Paris.
Each man to his own taste.
Truth is not a matter of taste.
Utterly irrelevant. A writer should seek to entertain his readers, to uplift, to stir the higher emotions.
Oh, yes, yes, I agree. The highest emotions. Compassion for suffering, sympathy for the weak, wonder at the passion of life, disdain for falsehood, anger at injustice.
My dear Zola, you are too full of hatred to be a writer.
Yes, hatred is wholesome and good. It is the indignation of those who are outraged by mediocrity and stupidity. You cannot kill a book or words that speak the truth. You can try to bury them through silence or scandal, but they will be revived in their time.
Year by year, book after book, the words of truth accumulated. They were read not only in France, but all over the world. And of those who read them, many cursed him. Others were frightened, and some wept in the presence of understanding. For if, as he thought, his novels were based on the methods of science, his portraits were painted with the passion of poetry. Émile Zola prepared himself day by day for the next work. Or perhaps the world in which he lived prepared him, as it was preparing another man, 20 years younger, for the role he was to play.
My military record, mon général.
Yes, yes, I have it before me.
My rating in the tests of the war college is among the highest.
Come to the point, Captain. What is it you want?
A post in the general staff of the army.
That does not seem advisable now at this time.
Am I to take this as a denial of my request, sir?
Don't be so touchy. I speak as one who has your interests at heart. You people shouldn't be so aggressive, so eager to push yourselves forward.
I am asking for nothing more than that to which my record and my grades in the War College entitle me.
Of course, of course. I'm not arguing with that. But consider, you would be the only Jew in the general staff.
Mon général, I am an officer of the French army, as well as a Jew.
In short, you insist, eh? Very well. According to the regulations by which I am bound, you will be on the general staff.
Thank you, mon général.
Wait, I haven't finished. Remember what I tell you now. You may yet come to regret your insistence, Captain Dreyfus.
The convergence of the two lives was still in the future. Émile Zola had never heard of the young captain of artillery, but he knew the France in which both lived and the atmosphere in which a royalist, anti-republican, anti-Semitic newspaper could call itself, with impudent irony, free speech.
We know whose sinister manipulations have brought about the present financial crisis, and we know what should be done with this alien race.
Zola knew what it was to hear now and then in the streets of Paris new and dangerous sounds. And in these times, with these sounds in his ears, Zola sat down to write a newspaper article.
Émile, maybe it is not... now, Émile, promise me you will not be angry.
Well, of course, Henri. If you will promise to say nothing to make me angry.
Well, Émile, maybe it would be better not to publish this article now.
Go on. I'm listening.
Well, the very title itself, Pour les Juifs, pour the Jews, is...
You don't like the title?
Well, at a time like this, when there's so much feeling, maybe it's not expedient.
No?
What I mean is, your new book is coming out soon. You see?
I see. I must be still now, so as not to displease people who might someday buy my book. I must be expedient, eh, Henri?
Will you twist my word?
The word was yours.
The article can wait.
Yes, perhaps.
for the Jews of France. Can they wait?
Emile, I...
It is most inconsiderate of the Jews to choose this time to be mistreated and persecuted. That's it, isn't it, Henri? That's it,
that... Emile, I was only thinking of your good.
I know, my friend. Therefore, I must speak out for my sake. And for the sake of those others who do not speak.
Few spoke out. And even fewer knew of the events of the autumn of 1894, when it was discovered that a member of the French general staff was selling information to Germany. Certainly, Emile Zola did not know of the investigation, nor the trial, nor the outcome.
The prisoner will rise. Captain Dreyfus, you have been found guilty of espionage and treason.
I am innocent.
Silence! Alfred Dreyfus, you are sentenced to imprisonment for the remainder of your natural life.
What?
And to be degraded from the commission you dishonored, and from the army of the French Republic.
Adjutant, tear the insignia from his uniform.
You are degrading an innocent man.
His sword, Adjutant. Break it in two.
I am innocent. Long live France. Long live the army.
Here it is, Emile. Here, the short item on the back page.
Yes, what about it, Henri?
Well, read it.
Oh, it pleases you to be mysterious. What, this one?
Yes.
A prison ship departed today for Devil's Island carrying the former officer convicted of espionage, Alfred Dreyfus. Well, all right, I've read it. Is there something I'm expected to say?
Well, it's true that it all happened while you were away in Italy, but after all...
I have read that there was a spy among the general staff.
That seems to be reasonably clear.
And I read that this, what's-his-name Dreyfus was tried and convicted, that's all.
And not quite all, Emile.
My friend, I am not so obtuse that I do not see where you are leading. Dreyfus is a spy. According to the public record, he is guilty, Jewish or not.
Yes, yes, I know.
Ah, you are troubled, my friend, eh?
Well, maybe it is I who am obtuse, Emile. You wrote... Pour les Juifs.
Because I'm against the persecution of Jews for being Jews. And of any people for being what they are.
Yet now you seem to be indifferent.
Henri, if a man is honest, he is my friend. If he is a thief, I do not defend him.
Well, maybe it is not always clear who is a thief. In any case, you've given me a powerful motive to remain honest. Emile, you didn't hear a word I said.
I was thinking, Henri, how it must be there, on Devil's Island.
Guard! Guard!
All right, all right. What do you want?
There have been no letters. Why have there been no letters from home?
You ask me every day. I told you, Dreyfus, the commandant...
I want to know what is happening. I must know.
It is no use to ask me.
They have forgotten me. They have forgotten me.
You must not ask me. I am not permitted to talk to you. Do you hear? Dreyfus, come closer. They have not forgotten. Listen. You have friends in France.
Monsieur Zola, we are friends of Dreyfus, but not one of us knows him as a man.
I myself have never even seen him.
Still, Dreyfus has need of friends, Monsieur Zola. He is innocent.
Monsieur Lazare, you ask me to decide between two unequal alternatives.
Was it not you who wrote, in the matter of truth, there is no choice?
Yet I must believe either that Dreyfus is guilty... Or I must believe that a dozen men in the highest places in the army and the government
have conspired to commit an act so dark and evil that the mind refuses to accept it.
Monsieur Zola, there was espionage. The General Staff needed a spy, and they found Dreyfus, a Jew.
But, Lazare, he was tried by a French court and convicted.
Yes. Well, we will not take any more of your time.
Ah, one moment. You have more to tell me?
A great deal more, monsieur.
Well, I want to hear it.
All the evidence against Dreyfus was not revealed to him or to anyone in order, the court said, to avoid difficulties with Germany.
Some of the evidence was false. For example, the handwriting of the intercepted message from the spy.
And some was entirely suppressed. Evidence about another man, the real spy. Now then, do you want to hear more, Monsieur Zola?
Gentlemen, I thank you. Let us make plans. There is work to be done.
On Devil's Island, a man moldered in a solitary cell, his hair graying and his mind at times wandering. In Paris, a few men who did not know Alfred Dreyfus, who knew only a victim of injustice, a few men abandoned everything else and worked, friends of justice, to find new evidence and shout it to the people of France.
Silence has become impossible. Truth is on the march, and nothing will stop her.
Zola wrote words of fire, and the flames died at the wall of public resistance. When the elders of France seemed willing to sacrifice truth to save the General Staff, Zola wrote an appeal to the young people. And youth answered as their fathers did, drowning the voices of the few who followed Zola after justice.
Close the window, Henri! Gentlemen, I will finish reading my article for tomorrow's paper. I accuse the General Staff of the monstrous crime of convicting an innocent man. I accuse the handwriting experts of having made lying and fraudulent reports, unless a medical examination will certify them to be deficient of sight and judgment. I accuse the War Office of having led a vile campaign in order to misdirect public opinion. And lastly, I accuse the courts martial of having violated all human rights in condemning a prisoner on testimony kept secret from him.
Monsieur Zola, this is a masterful...
Wait, Lazare. Wait, I have not finished. As to the men I accused, I do not know them. I have never seen them. I feel neither resentment nor hatred against them. I have one passion only, for light. In the name of humanity, which has borne so much and has a right to happiness. There. What do you think, gentlemen?
If any words can move the people of France, these are the words.
Oh, yes. If, Lazare, if... Ah, you have lost faith in the power of words when they are true words. Now listen, there is one more paragraph. In making these accusations, I am aware that I render myself liable to Articles 30 and 31 of the libel laws, which punish acts of defamation. I expose myself voluntarily. I am waiting.
You will not have to wait long, Monsieur Zola. The government will bring you to trial.
Good. Isn't that what we want?
We who are here with you, what can we say? It is you who will be on trial.
Yes, it is something to think about. But once in court, we can reopen the case of Dreyfus and let the free air blow away the smell of evil. You do not say anything, Lazare.
For so long we have been thinking of Alfred Dreyfus. Now I find my thoughts are of Emile Zola.
Ah, then put them out of your mind. Our only concern is that the people of France will have the opportunity to hear the truth.
Counsel for the defense will limit himself to the point at issue.
But, Your Honor, my question goes to the heart of the matter. The handwriting on the intercepted message...
The question will not be put. There will be no discussion of matters already judged.
I will prove that Alfred Dreyfus was not...
The question will not be put.
Madame Dreyfus, I will ask you to tell the court whether your husband was in Paris at the time when...
The question will not be put.
I demand the right accorded to murderers and thieves to call witnesses to have them heard.
The defendant will be seated. It is not your place to speak.
Someone must speak out.
You will obey the law of this court.
I do not know your law. I don't want to know it.
Please, Emile, control yourself. The court please, I will repeat the question.
The question will not be put. The question will not be put. The defendant may make his statement to the jury.
Emile, speak now, Emile.
Yes. Gentlemen, if I am here before you, it is because I wish to be here, desiring of my own free will that the whole obscure, monstrous affair be brought before your jurisdiction. I tell you, Dreyfus is innocent. At this solemn hour, before this tribunal, which represents human justice, before all France, before the entire world, I swear that Dreyfus is innocent. I desire that my country take no longer the way of deception and injustice. I may be sentenced here. Someday, France will thank me for having helped to save her honor.
Emile, quickly, a carriage is waiting at the side door. Emile!
Oh, is it any use when they don't listen? The verdict was ready from the beginning.
Hurry, hurry. There's no time to lose.
Then I am to go to prison. So be it. Still, they will hear my voice.
If you don't come at once, Emile, no one will ever hear your voice again.
Yeah. What? What are you saying, Lazare?
The mob. The mob is waiting for you at the front steps. We will leave by the side.
No.
Please, now, please, Emile, no heroics now. I do not have the courage.
Are you afraid of them?
I don't exaggerate. They will tear you to pieces.
I'll tell you something, Lazare. The sight of blood has always made me ill, and the thought of anyone's pain puts me in torment. I am also afraid, Lazare.
Then come quickly, before they find me.
But if fear is such a terrible thing, we could have been expedient and silent. Open the door.
Yes.
Open it, Lazare. Yes. What do you want of me? You have sent Alfred Dreyfus to a living death. If you take my life as well, what will you be killing? Emile Zola, an ugly man with a ragged beard and a habit of speaking many words. No, no. You will be murdering truth and burying justice and making a world for yourselves and your children in which fear and darkness will swallow all that remains of the humanity of human beings. Listen to me. Listen, my countrymen. Life does not flourish in the midst of falsehood, and strength does not arise out of injustice. Do not be afraid, my brothers. I tell you that a nation, a world, can live and be strong only when it throws the light of day upon the truth.
Emile Zola fought evil with a hot iron. He poured out his passion to flood a world grown indifferent to evil. In his time, the wrong that was done to Alfred Dreyfus, and thereby to all men, was undone by a world that he awakened. When he died, many mourned who once cursed, and these words were spoken at his grave.
He was, for a moment, the conscience of man.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address for 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Sidney Baer, Philadelphia Insurance Executive, Philadelphia Chairman of the Patron Society of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, and member of the Board of Overseers of the Seminary, Mr. Baer.
This dramatic tale of Dreyfus and Zola is important in the history of the world because it illustrates most clearly that the basic Judaic beliefs of truth and justice always come to the fore. Civilization often has been late in adopting the teachings of the ancient rabbis and the students of the Torah, the Jewish law. But finally, it is the hope of all peoples that justice and truth will prevail and that this will bring peace to all the peoples of the earth. This stirring story of how Zola battled all odds to bring justice to a French Jewish army officer who had been unjustly convicted of treason may well point up the objectives of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. It was formed more than 80 years ago to train rabbis for the newly formed synagogues in the United States, and it has become the source of continued study and perpetuation of these teachings of the Torah. In essence, then, the seminary and its famous scholars are disseminating the Judaic beliefs, not only to the Jews, but to all the peoples of the world. The seminary also is the fountain for Jewish survival, for the strengthening of the cultural, educational, and religious fabric of this ancient faith. The Jewish Theological Seminary of America is dedicated not to yesterday, but to bringing the wisdom of Judaism to the modern world of today and tomorrow. An integral part of this wisdom is the theme of today's Eternal Light program, truth and justice. Because of this, I have dedicated my community work to the seminary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baer. Eternal Light drama today, Hot Iron, written by Joseph Mindell, was a third in a series entitled Judgment and Justice. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured today was Stutz Cotsworth as Zola. Others in the cast were Amy Sedell, Roger DeCoven, Guy Repp, Robert Dryden, Merrill Jowles, William Griffiths, Ivor Francis, and James Dukas. The narrator, House Jameson. We invite you to join us next week when the Eternal Light will present The Transgression of Judel Kinderschein by Peter Barry. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network. Ooh.